Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now.
Production presenting Black Urban America Radio, one of the few owned Black internet radio stations that discuss solutions and issues concerning the African American community. And I just like getting the lineup. On Saturdays, we have Provocative Thought with Carlton Sneed, myself for Tuesday evenings, and my name is Kenny Jones. On Wednesday, we had Shaka Zulu, a.k.a. Jermaine Harris, with the Elephant in the Room. On the second Tuesday of each month, we have the lovely Miss Ann Thielen with Healthy Relationships in the Black Community. And the third Tuesday of the month, we got my man T. Nathan. He's waiting to... Oh, I guess you're going to spill some more noise with us. But before I bring him on, you know, this has been a rough week. It's been a rough week. And we got America's in trouble. And I try to explain to everyone, during the campaign of 2016, it was going to be like this. But everybody thought, oh, you're too radical. You're too progressive. I'm trying to tell you, this man is not to be trusted. Let me go on. Let me go on before I bring T. Nathan on. You know, he's ready to go. He's about to cut me off before I go on and everything. But let me go and finish my introduction. I just want to say that We Talk Production going to be reaching out to different small Black businesses for ads in January. Also to self-employed people to purchase ads. Our website is about to be up in another week and everything. Carl Snee of Provocative Thought been handling that. And he finally got fired. Finalize. Now I'd like to bring on the man. Before he comes on to discuss the illusion of the impeachment process, personally, I think that's going to happen. America has shown his colors. Yeah, we had 16, 20 years of people tolerating each other and being politically correct. But this man, I got to give him credit. He brought America to his true colors. And I can remember being laughed at with black folks, young black folks, back in the Clinton era and the early, the Bush era, say, oh, you too black. One girl told me, okay, Mr. Black Panther, making a joke. But I like to see her today. I like to see her today with all this police brutality, with Colin Kaepernick, and all these young brothers getting shot up, and sisters getting shot up across America. T. Nathan, welcome.
Greetings, salutations. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right, I'm testing out this new sound system. I want to make sure you could hear me. Man, what is going on? How are you feeling?
You know what? I'm feeling great because I'm right. I was right. I've been following this man since 1982 when he purchased the New Jersey Generals, and I was a football player then. And I didn't like him then. He messed up my career. I had beef with it. Was all sports related. But now, this is something that's really, that he divided the country. But this is something, like you know what? I'm going to say
I'm
going
to stop you there.
When he hooked up with Rudy Giuliani, yeah, I know Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani ain't nothing but a racist. Rudy Giuliani, and I say this live, Rudy Giuliani ain't nothing but a racist. And let me tell you, David Dinkins, the first black mayor of New York City, you know what Rudy Giuliani did? He got all of the cops to make dogs that look like David Dinkins hanging from a tree at a political rally. This is this kind of man. He gentrified all the black neighborhoods, and Bloomberg just followed him. Bloomberg ain't no better. This is the kind of people that Donald Trump has with him. And this is what gets me at Black Folks Fell For It. I like it because it proves me right. I hope he continues, and maybe we will unify more and more.
First, I want to address something that you said, that the present occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania is responsible for dividing the country.
A no. Bomb and an addict, too.
Yeah.
He's a cocaine fool, too.
But as I was saying, the country is already divided. The country's been divided. He just took advantage of it in a way. He just took advantage of it in a way that makes people think this is new. And it's not new. It's just coming out of the woodworks in a way, because they have their champion. They have their knight in shining armor. They have their inbred I'm not going to say that on the air. It might be kids listening. But that is what it is. So that's what I wanted to say, that this is not the result of the current occupant's presidency. It is a divided country. The divided country is the result of his presidency. He just took advantage of that undercurrent of racism and ignorance that has always been at the core of American racism and rode it to victory to the White House. And in such a manner that, not that he is any more racist than some of his predecessors, but he's more openly racist than his predecessors, because this election showed that you do not need the black vote to to become president of this country in a way that people were thinking he did. And they keep feeding us that illusion now. But having said that, I was watching the impeachment trials, more of them, and laughing because I treat it as a comedy. I just need hours of comical laughs because you watch how Republicans bend themselves into pretzels to continue to defend this man, and you watch how the Democrats allow themselves to bend themselves into pretzels and don't push home the advantage. I told you before, I'm neither a Republican or a Democrat. I'm a black man in America, and I believe in it until we start voting our own self-interest. Neither party's platform is actually in our unfeathered best interest. Now we just have to pick candidates and pick races to survive what we can now. But in the end, neither party has been, I mean, both parties have let people of color down consistently, not just one more than the other, but consistently through our history. So to form an alliance with any party just based on a D or an R for a black person in this country is a recipe for disaster, because the principles that underline the party are still racist. But I'm watching these hearings, right? And then I'm looking at people get excited about the removal of the present occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. That removal was not going to come about because of this process, because I don't think it's their strategy to even get the president truly impeached and removed from office. But the strategy I have to give up, that I still think Nancy Pelosi has a strategy, and the impeachment trials are just a tool to that strategy. The strategy I believe that they're overreaching, that they're reaching for, is 2020 election. And to have these impeachment trials be at this time going into primaries and going, we see some of the fallout. You see Kentucky and they elected their Democratic governor. You see that the governor of Louisiana, the Democrat, held on.
Oh,
there.
That was
you
the big
deal.
That was the big defeat for Trump.
I don't know if it was a big defeat or not. If he was an incumbent, he was a governor. They want to make so much about how people come.
Hold it now.
Hold it now. Hey. I actually have that song now. But they want to make it about, just like Alabama, how people of color saved the state, or people of color turned out in droves to vote for this man. But now I'm asking myself, okay, well, what do you do for us? That if that's the case, if you believe that we saved you and we are the reasons that you are holding office, what do we get in return? Because if we get the status quo that we've always gotten, then it doesn't really matter for us. And that's another thing I think people, yes, I talk about the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and I talk about the adverse effect he's had on the country. But the thing about it is that people of color, we're used to struggling. And I think that, and sometimes that works against us, but you're used to struggling. We don't wake up every morning and stress over the fact that the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is still in office. We get up and we go about our lives and we look up and say, hey, it's about status quo. Yeah, so we speak out. There's nothing wrong with speaking out, and there's nothing wrong with bringing about different changes on your level in your community. But the overreaching picture is that those of us who understand the system and understand the situation understand that, hey, who are you all putting forth that is really going to drive us to the polls in record numbers, like the first election of Barack Obama did, President Obama did, to make our voices heard in a marginal race that pushes it over the top? And it's no one. I mean, I don't understand black people's fascination with Vice President Biden. I think the only fascination they have with him is that he just happened to be the vice president of the first black president of the country. Because if you look at his record, he has not done anything significantly spectacular for people of color. And then the people of color that are in the race.
Look what he did to Anita Hill.
The treatment of Anita Hill was both sexist and racist. So it's a combination of, I don't even understand. And then his whole his whole apology, I call it the Beyonce sorry not sorry, about how he hugged people and how he treated people as far as on the campaign trail, how he hugged women and how he familiarized. That's touchy feely. We got a president in office that did that. He just was came out and just admitted he was doing it, right? So we get Joe Biden, problematic. Kamala Harris, I wish Kamala Harris could be who I wanted her to be, but she's not. Her problematic issues and being, and it's not the office she held.
You talk about that lady from California.
Yeah, Kamala Harris. Attorney General.
Serious when she was going with the mayor.
We're not going there. We're not going there because that is the least of my issues with a politician. White politicians have been sleeping outside of their relationships for decades.
True.
I mean, for hundreds of years. Thomas Jefferson had a black Sally Hyde. That's not my issue. I don't care what you do in your personal life. And I think that's the problem we have in this country, that we think that people's personal relationships.
The prosecutor
doesn't matter.
Never been afraid to the black community.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, if we're talking about that, yeah. It's not that they had been
prosecutor.
But she was the highest prosecutor
the state
in the
attorney general.
And
I said, oh, forget about it.
Yeah, she was the highest prosecutor in the state, and she could have made a difference about what she's talking about now. That's my issue. When you had the power and the ability to make a difference, you could have made a difference. And I'm not saying not prosecuting people of color for crimes they committed, but you understood that your justice system and the punishments they levied were disproportionately impacting people of color. You were at the pinnacle of office in that state where you could have made something happen and you could have made that a reality, and you didn't. But now you sit here and talk about it. Like, oh, well, this, and this. It was you were the attorney general of the state. What did you do about it? Oh, I was elected to uphold. No, you didn't do anything about it. So next. And I'm going to tell you, and I'm not endorsing anyone yet. I'm not endorsing anyone. I like the
reality of
it. I
got my eyes on Corey.
Yeah, no.
He comes from the grassroots. I've seen him. I've seen him grow up. He comes from the grassroots.
No, Cory Booker, I met Cory. I've worked with Cory before on a debate for that senator in Mississippi when we were getting him ready, well, running for senator, and he came down. But the idea is that Cory Booker has enough, he has other baggage also, issues that we haven't worked out. From what I believe he's capable of, but he doesn't have the national presence anyway to be, and he hasn't made a breakout moment like Barack Obama did during his campaign run. He hasn't had that breakout moment, and he's not going to have it now, because now it's going to people like Diane Warren and Pete Buttigieg, who can't get traction in the black community. Diane Warren, out of all the candidates that I've seen come and go so far, and I like her plans. She's problematic also, and other reasons. But plans are what we need to talk about. And we're going to get to the point where one of these people is going to win the nomination. And then you're going to have to decide, barring some John Wilkes relative showing up.
Yes. You're going down the road. And I want to ask you something. Excuse me for cutting you off. But you went down the road. I want to ask you, can any one of them beat? It's one thing I can say about Donald. He has charisma. Got that New Yorker in him. New York people got charisma. Does any one of them has a charisma to beat Donald?
I disagree with you first on him having charisma. No, he doesn't have any charisma. He has the ability to connect with a certain group of people that have put their hopes and dreams on him as a white savior after the backlash of 8 years of a president like Barack Obama.
But he's got that media behind him, though, see?
You know, if you want to talk about Bill Clinton had charisma. John Kennedy had charisma. They had the ability to talk to people and bridge distances and gaps between ideologies that people might not
have
believed
in.
No, the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue aligns his beliefs to tell those people that what they want to hear. He's not bridging any distances between a group of people, or he's not coming to any compromises with people about something moving forward. When this president has made the word his base into a whole nother philosophy, when you look at the fact that no matter what he does, this is not charisma. This is that unfeathered following like Jim Jones had in the 70s, and everyone go down to Guyana and drink some Kool-Aid.
Well, I know about Jim Jones.
Flavor Aid. It wasn't Kool-Aid. I keep telling people that. But my thing is that it's not charismatic as far as people have made him into what they want him to be in their minds that follow him.
How can he get people to follow him when he's a crook and a liar? And he's been a crook and a liar all his life.
Ken, the American dream is based off of theft of property and lying. I mean, what you think? You think the natives that were here, the indigenous people were here, were lied to, stolen from, and it's the basis that this country was formed on. We were dragged across an ocean, kidnapped, and forced into labor. So you're talking about how can someone continue to do that and be successful, because it's woven into the DNA of this country when it comes to the oppressor and the colonizer. This is not something new. It's like only time crime is a problem is when people of color commit it. It's not a problem when white people commit it. You look at this whole situation with the SAT situation. It's not a problem. Those are just white people problems. Those are white people problems, and white people will solve them in the way white people solve them, and nobody's going to jail for any massive amount of time unless they're a person of color involved in the scheme. But the basis of this country – this country was formed on crime. So to harken back and to elect a president that is guilty, not just suspected of all these crimes, and it brings us back to the whole impeachment hearing. When this man, I was at a function the other day, and this supposedly intelligent guy was trying to dip into my conversation I was having, and he was like, why do we have to use Russian phrases like quid pro quo to talk about what he called him by the name I never call him. And I was like, I just looked at him. I said, number one, quid pro quo is not Russian, it's Latin. But that it hits me that these people don't even know what that means. And they can't see the idea. And when I'm watching this impeachment hearing, I'm telling you, people, we're watching two different impeachment hearings. Those people who are dug in to supporting this current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, no matter what he does, are not seeing the same impeachment hearing the rest of us are seeing, because they are looking at this like, what's the big deal? Because they don't know what the Constitution says in the first place, but they're looking at it like, what's the big deal? Okay, so he held up. They don't understand the idea that not only holding up the aid, but that the executive branch of the government does not control the purse strings. So by virtue of Congress already have voting to give this aid should have been given and not held up for any reason to do with the executive office. That'd be like the Supreme Court deciding, hey, we're going to hold up this aid that you all have voted on that has nothing to do with our powers, and we're going to make it contingent upon this country getting a Supreme Court. You can't do that. The quid pro quo that people don't understand is one thing, but to understand that this country is on the verge of a constitutional crisis, but I think we've been in a constitutional crisis ever since this man has been in office. But to not understand these things works in his favor, because people are looking at this like you and I have a business deal and it's about you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. But this is not how the United States government works as an entity dealing with other countries and other sovereign countries. But they don't want to see that. And you hear these people defending. And then I look at now what's interesting is people don't realize I watch Fox News also because it is very – it's another comedy show to me because I get to see how these people bend themselves up to try to defend the indefensible. And it's like, wow, did you really come up with that? Or to watch people tear at the honor and dignity of people that are just telling the truth as they experienced it as something of a they were a never Trumper. What? Most of the country is not a, is a never Trumper. Do you understand? You were talking about electability earlier, and you were saying is he charismatic enough to win? He doesn't have to win the popular vote. He didn't win it last time. All he has to do is win the Electoral College, another fall in our system. That's what people don't realize. They want to talk about the mandate that this president has, but he doesn't have a mandate because he's not elected by the majority of the people of this country. He's elected by the Electoral College. And I, before anybody calls
and
tells about the Electoral
caller.
College.
And you're going to have a caller, T. 3290. Welcome to Black Urban America. Do you have a question or a statement? 3290. I guess he don't want to say anything. Well,
okay.
All you people that are listening by laptop, you can call in at 909-265-9215 and press 1. Sorry about that, T, but the person didn't want to say
no
anything.
Problem. No
and
problem.
Press 1 if you want to say anything. Go ahead.
And then you look at and you look at now. You look at the fact you were talking earlier and you mentioned Michael Bloomberg, and I want to mention Deval Patrick in the same sentence because you have them now announcing their Deval Patrick announced his candidacy for president of the United States after all the debates. And then you have Michael Bloomberg, who does what he always does, but I think he's closer to committing to it this time than last. But these people that are entering the race at this fact at this point after the, all the groundwork has been done. And I think it's a reason for that. They talk about consensus. No, there is not consensus. Even though we talk about how many percentage of the vote all the other candidates, the major five candidates have now, it's still nowhere near 50%, even when you add it all up. So there is not a consensus on which of these candidates is going to break out. But let me tell you, if black people support Michael Bloomberg as president, I'm going to throw a fit. Stop and frisk. It was funny. I was watching him on – what show was I watching him on? Or was this an outtake I was looking at on
you
MSNBC?
You don't want Michael Bloomberg as president of the United States.
Basically. He was apologizing.
He was apologizing.
Don't. Yeah, he was apologizing
Michael Bloomberg
for stopping Frisk.
Shut down all the black-owned social service agency in New York City. It's on record.
Yeah, and,
Michael Bloomberg
yeah.
shut down all of the black-owned social service agency in New York City in the early 2000s, the mid-2000s. And it's only one left. You don't want this man to be.
Yeah. As I was saying, as I was saying, right? People of color did not support Michael Bloomberg for the reasons he's on this apology tour about stop and frisk and how it disproportionately affected men, black men, and men of color specifically in New York. When you have more stops that you actually have between black men between the ages of 14 and 35 in New York. But it was all right. But now if he knows that in order to run a national campaign, you're going to need black folks and in the Democratic Party. And that's not going to happen. It's just like Pete Buttigieg, why he can't get any traction, even though he's leading in the New Hampshire primary vote polls, he's not going to win South Carolina. He's not going to go into an area that's predominantly black and win that. Unfortunately, the person that's probably going to win it shouldn't win it either, and that it would be Joe Biden, Uncle Joe. But these are issues that people of color are not realizing that we have to start having. We talked about this before. We have to start holding candidates accountable for an agenda that includes the betterment of people of color economically.
Do you think we don't have to do that?
What's that?
Do you think we know how to do that?
We know how.
I mean, holding
the how.
Holding these politicians accountable to our issues. Do you think we know how to do that? Now, we know how to buckle and dance. We know how to invite them to events. We know how to smile for these little cameras with them. We know how to shake hands. We know how to hug them. But do we know how to hold them accountable?
I don't think it's about knowing how to hold them accountable. It's just that we have not done what is necessary to hold them accountable. I had a person, I had this individual tell me, and I wish I could, and I actually have it, I could play it for you one day. But he was talking, he was trying to make a comparison about how if the extreme left and the extreme right need to, if we're calling people names in this country, if we're talking about racism in this country, both sides, listen to this, both sides need to stop and do like South Africa did and come to the table and discuss our differences so we can move on. Because if you're pointing fingers and you got to admit, what did you do to make this situation like that? And I'm listening to this, right? And I'm like, that's like saying, what did the girl who got raped do to invite this rape? And what does she have to acknowledge that she did if she kills this man that's on top of her? To me, I don't care. Once you did what you did to her, whatever she did back to you to stop you was clear and necessary. So I'm listening to this argument, and he mentioned South Africa, and I couldn't help. I had to dissect that because I told him, I said, there are so many differences between the situation because, one, the government of South Africa did not come to the table because they wanted to. They came to the table because they realized that 41 million black folks uniting against a 5 million white population was not a recipe for continued existence. They didn't come to they realized that and these people had committed to freedom and liberation at any cost. So, yeah, you had 5 million, you had guns, but you had 41 million individuals deciding to coalesce. And let's say that only half of them coalesced around the idea. Then that's still 20.5 million people deciding that you need to stop. And so, yes, you should come to the table. And then another thing that happens that America has never done was the Truth and Consequence and the Truth and Reconciliation Commission that was formed, that where war criminals were put on trial and families were given a chance to speak their truths and unburden themselves. Not America has not done that since slavery, Jim Crow, lynching, the civil rights era. None of those eras have truth and reconciliation because we still have murderers of children during the civil rights era that are allowed to go free and have faced no consequences for their actions. You know, we have people today that allow to kill black people, cops, and they are getting no punishment. So until America does those things, and until you, like you were talking about, we as people of color hold America responsible by any means necessary. See, that's what the oppressor and the colonizer doesn't want us to talk about. They want you to sing Kumbaya and hold hands with the same people that as soon as you let their hand go, they slap you. They want you to do this and forgive, and we keep forgiving. And people have instilled in us that just when someone does you wrong, forgive them and hold and pray for them and move on.
I don't forgive.
No.
I don't pray for them. I don't forgive.
I forgive.
I'm sorry.
I can't. Let me finish, Ken. My forgiveness is not for them. Okay? I said I don't forget. That doesn't mean I want to hold hands with you and go sing Kumbaya. That's not what it's about. See, that's the mindset that we get when we think about what we are told to do as opposed to what I'm saying that we do. I'm saying that you can exist on your planet and I can exist on mine. And as long as you leave me alone, I will leave you alone. That is my idea of forgiveness. My forgiveness is also if I get in the mood, I might wipe your planet out too. But well, that's another story. Mm-hmm. But my thing is that we have been only taught there are two options. And one of those options is corrosive to us. And the other one is deadly. So, no, it's not. Neither one of those should work for us. We have to realize that we are going to hold you accountable. It's just like when I was younger. If I did something and my mother decided that I was going to get a whooping, as we called it,
mm-hmm.
just because I cried and apologized for what I did, it doesn't mean that she didn't accept my remorsefulness, but she still punished me to show me that you're still responsible for your actions. So that's what I'm talking about with truth and reconciliation and forgiveness. I could forgive you, but I will still punish you for your actions. And that's what we have to start realizing. We still need to tell our stories. We still need to unite and understand that we are in a state of oppression because we allow it on so many levels. It's like I'm an advocate of white people thinking they have the license to say the N-word around me. And I'm like, yeah, no. That. And then I don't care about your arguments. I got into it with this guy once. Say, I'm just exercising my freedom of speech. And I'm saying, you think a piece of paper is going to stop me from punching you in your teeth. And that doesn't work. See, it's about respect, yes. And then not knowing what the Constitution says, because I'm not the government. Your First Amendment rights that you're talking about protects you from the government doing something untold to you for you speaking out. It doesn't stop me from picking up this bat and hitting you in your mouth with it. I'll still have to deal with consequences, but don't think that piece of paper is going to give you it's like restraining orders as women are getting killed in this country at a higher rate by their former or present lovers because they have a restraining order, and they think that restraining order does not protect you from that man coming through your window and doing somebody harm to you.
Right.
It's just it just gives you recourse for when he does that bodily harm. But we live in a society, as far as when you talk about us as people uniting, that we don't understand our power. We don't understand that united, that we can force change. And power has never conceded anything except to more power. It doesn't concede to, we're going to appeal to their moral side and, we're going to appeal to the goodness in their heart. No, if there was any goodness in your heart, you wouldn't be lynching Negroes. If there was any
right.
goodness in your heart, you wouldn't be practicing racism. If there was any goodness in your heart, you wouldn't be locking kids in cages. So let's stop trying to appeal to the goodness in somebody's heart, because when you have goodness in your heart to do something and you find out something you've done is abhorrent, you take the steps and the actions to correct that immediately. I don't have to point it out to you. It's like I tell people, I don't convince white people that I am valuable. That's not my job. My job is to be valuable for myself. It's not my job to say, I want you to see me and recognize me and look at my humanity. That's a lessening to me because I am a God. I am above all that. So to not see me for who I am, that's because you choose to dehumanize me. And I am not going to defend or make you see me as a human. No, that's not my problem. Toni Morrison, who I love reading her book, but she posed a question I put in one of my social media outlets. And it was the question was, in one of her last interviews, and she was talking and she said, she was talking to racists. She said, who are you without your racism? Who are you without your racism? And that is a very liberating question for us to hear, as well as for these people that, don't understand that if you remove racism for you, you have to admit you're nothing. And that hurts. You have to admit you're nothing. I remember my grandmother telling me she knew she was morally superior to all of those people that hung up signs that says white only. She knew she was morally superior to them when they tried to exclude people of color or make them go to the back and not sit at the counter with them. She says their need for superiority just proved how inferior they were. And it stuck with me. And then that's why I get to that point that it's not my job to and I think we as black people also have a tendency to pat people on the back for being decent human beings too much. My mother didn't go around patting me on the back for doing what I was supposed to do. She patted me on the back when I went above and beyond what I was supposed to do. Now, if we set the bar so low that just because you I see these people talk about, oh, they hear a white person say one semi-woke thing, and they'd be like, oh, yeah, we're going to invite them to the picnic, and they can come hang out. I'm like, what are you talking about? That's not anything except what you're supposed to do. We have set the bar so low that just speaking to us, we think that all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah, see, they woke. They understand. No. But we continue to do that because we have been taught to do that. We have been taught these Judeo-Christian beliefs that wind up crippling us in ways that prevent us from liberating ourselves. Because we don't want to do what Malcolm said, by any means necessary. We just want to do it in a way that we feel a light after we do it. We don't want to, you know, don't say that to around Miss Sally because she might get offended. If the truth offends her, then guess what? She can pull up a seat to this table because I'm going to offend her. Because once you censor your truth, you're not telling the truth. You're telling something to make somebody else feel good. I don't want to shame white people or colonizers or those who support oppression into anything. I'm not here to shame you into anything. You either do it or you don't. But my thing is, I'm here to provide consequences for your actions, to give you a motivation to stop. Because Dr. King said, you know, we can't change somebody's heart and who they're going to be, who we. But what we can do is so that there are consequences for you openly displaying your racism or your oppression towards me. And those consequences are enough for me. I don't care how you actually feel about me. You don't have to like me, but you're going to understand that you will respect me and that the opportunities that I want and deserve are going to be there for me. Okay. That's the first round. That's the first round. Ew. Oh, my chest. I'm not walking up and down my neighborhood today either, so you don't have to worry about the police pulling me over while I'm walking.
You know, what I don't understand, is that how come we only, why do we continue to be reactionary people? For the past month, when you said last month we should have a blackout, and I've been posting, you know, how many of you want to do a blackout? Do you think a blackout's a good idea? And what have you? And nobody responded. But if something happens, oh, let's boycott. Let's do this. Why are we reacting instead of being proactive? Instead of developing our genders, you know, I get a sense, I could be paranoid, black politicians are scared to develop a black agenda. Or is that just me?
No, it's not just you. Hold on.
You think that's true, or you think I'm just being paranoid? I'm really asking two questions. Why we got to be a reactionary people? And the other question, are black politicians afraid of developing a black agenda? And a third question, do we still have a black caucus?
Yeah, third question, the easiest, no. It's not, I guess I'm going to wrap all those questions up. We are not, it's a two-way street. Your leaders have to support your ideas and you have to support your leaders. We are too used to putting people in office and then walking away like we have done something, like that's all they needed. And some of it's on us and some of it's on them, but it's a basically a combination because you can't just put somebody in office and say, okay, go solve everything, because actually those people are your employees and you have to work in your communities towards the same goals and find out the goal. You can't expect them to just magically wave their hand and everything come. You got to show up when they need you to show up. And we're not doing that. We'll put them in office and then sit back like, okay, okay, wave your magic wand and make all this go away. And that's not how it works. And we are not committed to that. You talk about an agenda. We have voted for people because we like the way they look. We have voted for people because we like that they have a stable family relationship. Like that's any indication of if they'll be a good politician. We vote for people for some of the most superficial reasons and not hold them to a standard that says, okay, I personally don't care. Like we were talking about Kamala Harris. I don't care what your extramarital situation was. That's not my issue with you, because all of us have those kind of skeletons in our closet if we want to talk about that. And I think we also elect people based upon the principle of we believing in perfection that doesn't exist in the people that are even doing the electing. So those are not issues for me. The issue is, where do you stand on such and such? And then do you stand where we need you to stand? And if you stand where you need to stand, then we're going to be there standing with you to also help you pass this agenda to get this thing. We're going to show up at city council meetings. And I tell people, we talk about the national picture. Let's talk about the local picture before we can talk about national. We got to elect mayors. We got to elect city councilmen. We not only got to elect them, we got to show up and support them and show them that we are here holding you accountable, but we're also here for numbers so other people see that you have this behind you. And then we have to push agendas that are powerful and positive for people of color. And that doesn't mean at the exclusion. See, this country hears whenever we talk about the betterment of people of color, it seems like we have to be talking about the lessening of white people. No, it's not at all. What I'm talking about is that we need to push agendas that better our conditions and our communities. And in turn, because in turn, what is going to happen, just like when, you know, we're going to in turn raise up the whole and not just us. We're going to raise up all of us. And that's what needs to happen. We live in a country, we live in a world where the top 1% live like gods. And the bottom 90% are struggling. There is something wrong with this picture. And until we get to the point where we realize that most of those people at the bottom suffering look like you and I, different shades of you and I, but look like you and I, and we need to say no more. And see, that go back to my apartheid situation. Apartheid did not end because everybody just had a relevant factor saying, hey, let's stop fighting. And just accept and depend on the goodness of the ruling class to do what's right. Because if that was the case, we wouldn't have had to have a meeting. We wouldn't have had to come to no table. No, you come to the table with warring factions when you realize, hey, okay, look, this is what's going to happen. This is what we need to talk about because we don't like this road. And you all might get there going this way, but it'll take you longer. So we don't want to be wiped out, and you don't want to lose too many people. So we're going to come to the table, because it wasn't a fact that South Africa was going to be liberated. It was a fact of how long was it going to take and how much obstacles were we going to have, they're going to have to run over to get there. And that's what this country has not realized, because we have not got together and made this country realize that, hey, we are prepared to do whatever it takes to get you to understand that oppression is not our liberation. And we're not going to continue to wait on you to liberate. And you can't give us liberation, but just get out of our way. We're not going to continue to wait by the excuses you're giving us about, hey, we got to take care of this, we got to build this, and we're going to get this, and then we'll talk about your communities falling apart and healthcare and all that. No, if we're going to die anyway, that's nothing. We haven't realized, like some of those Africans that came over through the Middle Passage and they jumped off the ship because life in slavery was unacceptable. See, we haven't realized that we're dying anyway. We're dying anyway. So why not use those deaths to make a statement for those of us that can be left for our children to say, hey, okay, look, they understand now what Malcolm meant by any means necessary. So if it takes doing this to get to that table, and we're going to continue to do this until you understand that, yes, this is now we need to, we can talk. And it can't be a compromise with oppression. That is a non-compromising issue. I tell people I don't debate with people about oppression and racism because there's no compromise. Either you are or you're not. It's not like, okay, let's reach the table and come to some agreement on how you should be liberated. Like on Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays, you can be free. On Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, you can be enslaved. And we are alternate Sundays. No. There is no compromise. People get mad at me all the time. Well, you won't come to our debates and debate. What am I debating about? My freedom and liberation is not a debate topic. It's not a debate topic. And we need to stop treating it like it is. We need to stop treating it like it is something that we need white people to give us and we need to convince them to give us. No, we need to convince them that we will take it. And if you want to be a part of this world and this, and if you want to still be a part of this existence, then we should all come to the table and decide how we're going to live together that does not involve any compromising on my liberation. And if we can't do that, then we continue to stay in our opposite corners. Because there are much worse fates than dying. There are much worse fates. And we just don't understand that. So, yep, that's my spiel for the night. That's my spiel for the night. And I wanted to, you know, before we go, I was looking at, and I want to talk about bullying for a moment, especially in our community, right, before I go, because it struck me. I was looking at this montage of kids under the age of 12 that have committed suicide because of bullying. This little girl was 8 years old, and she committed suicide. Number one, I'm wrapping my mind around suicide. Then I'm wrapping my mind around these are preteen children, 8 years old. And I don't ever know if you've seen a movie called The Hand That Rocks the Cradle with Rebecca De Monnier. And this skipping over. But there was a scene where this child was, one of the children in her care was being bullied by this student that was on the playground, bigger than the other student. And, you know, this scene stuck with me because she saw it and she marches over and she slaps the child off of the merry-go-round that was doing the bullying, right? I know people are not going to like that when I say it. But if it comes down to my child dying because of a bully or me slapping a child off of a merry-go-round, that is not a choice for me. See, we are leaving these children in these situations with no support. Talking about, well, just suck it up and it's not going to be that bad. And I was like, yeah, that's true. We know it gets better later, but I'm eight. I'm not I can't figure all that out. I'm eight. If I was figuring all that out, I would be an adult. But I'm eight now, and this hurts. And all you're telling me to do is get over it. And, like, it's no big deal. But you're like, you forgot what you are to be eight. And I think that's the point I'm making is that, you know, as long as we allow these children to have no consequences for their actions, then they're going to continue to do those actions. But Rebecca De Monnier is carrying it. I'm not saying go out and slap people on the playground. You know, I would. But I'm saying that they have to understand that there are consequences to their actions that they're not going to like. A stern talking to is not going to. And what does that mean? They're bullies. They're bullies. The sternly talking to them is not doing anything. You have to make the cost of their decisions cost too much. And I just want to tell parents out there to just, you know, listen to your children, pay attention to your children, and don't try to have children solve something in an adult manner
because they're children. And that's the antithesis of what an adult is. And expecting them to be little adults is wrong. Is wrong. So, but Ken, I got to go early. I hate to cut it off, but I have to pick something up at the airport and I have to leave. So I have to cut out for 5 minutes. But brother, you stay up, keep your health up. And until next time, man, I love you. Thank you for the opportunity to have a voice that reaches across this country and to hopefully draw somebody in and say, yeah, this is what we need to do. And they draw somebody in and we continue to draw in until we get this thing done. All right. Ken. Hello.
Mm-hmm.